This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
Impress your friends, amaze your coworkers, make your family proud. Here's what you need to know. I'ma tell you what you need to know.
All right, first of all, you need to know Jungle Law, proud sponsor of our Need to Know. If you are running into anything like DUIs, even federal charges, Jungle Law has you covered. 35 years of experience. Check them out right now. We talk a little bit about the Royals here in a second, but first the news becoming official that Carlos Dunlop signing a one-year deal worth up to $8 million with the Kansas City Chiefs. So the defensive end in the mix. It now looks a little bit more complete on that defensive line as they set out to overhaul it. Took a little time. They stayed patient and got it done. We'll hear more about that coming up here in a little bit as we'll hear from the guys on training camp. Of course, last night the Kansas City Royals making a trade. They're back in action tonight, Royals and Yankees. Brady Singer plus 205 against Jameson Taillon, minus 225. So sports betting going to be up and running here very soon. That means you got to bet $225 to win 100 on the Yankees. If you bet 100 on the Royals, they'd give you back 205 plus your 100 back. So more than a 2-to-1 dog tonight. Andrew Benintendi will lead off for the Yankees and play left field. So an interesting little scenario there. Gets traded and then turns around and plays against the team that traded him all in one night. Bobby Witt Jr. not in the lineup tonight. Mike Matheny said earlier that Witt would go through a full pregame workout. Witt has not played since Sunday. Michael Garcia is going to get the start at shortstop, a promising young, kind of a Nicky Lopez-ish, pretty good on base percentage, not a lot of pop, good glove, shortstop. It'll be Michael Garcia. So, again, seeing the young players here for the Kansas City Royals, that's what we're seeing is the youth movement being served by the Royals. J.J. Pecola talked about that Benintendi trade today. He met with the media via Zoom. I asked J.J., we'll let you hear a number of the questions that I fired out. I asked J.J. Pecola how much teams are able to target. You know, basically, when you're out there, are you at the whim of what they're offering, or can you target guys and go after them? How much can you target what it is you really want in return on these trades?
Really, the way this process worked, and I think every trade, if we go through anything here in the next 3 or 4 days, it's probably going to have a different type of feel to it. But once we knew what teams were very serious about acquiring him, now it's examining and doing a deep dive into their system. It starts with, you know, who's the most desirable player and if they're willing to trade him, if it's a one for one, then it just sort of blossoms out and, okay, it's pretty clear they're not going to do a one for one. So how do we combine players and how do we want to package things and where do they have this, you know, a particular team have depth? What's the history with those organizations? You know, so we factor all those things in, but it's I'll say organic. I mean, you just kind of get a feel and you develop a feel as it's going. One team, you know, had a, you know, closer to major league player combined with another player that was further away. So you weigh that versus three guys that are in full season, two of which are probably going to end up in double A pretty quickly. One is probably going to jump a level as well. And because they are strike throwers, we believe they'll be able to move a little bit quicker. That, in our eyes, was better than what other teams were talking about. So I don't know if I'm answering that question well, Seren, but I think it just every team offers something a little bit different, and you just have to weigh one versus the other and what fits us. And as we've talked about many times, a lot of people on this call, you know, pitching is always something that you need. So I don't think you can go wrong with pitching. So getting deeper on the pitching end is really important. Plus, one thing I think we all recognize, there's a nucleus of position players right now that are starting to establish themselves as major leaguers. So we can build around that. And in this particular case, something that may have helped the position players just didn't exist. Something that was close to the major leagues, it can join, whether it's Bobby, MJ, Prado, Pasquantino, you know, that group, it just didn't exist in this particular trade.
Is there a feeling, you mentioned, you know, that the season's been a disappointment, right? That maybe your projections were that the wins and losses would have been a little bit better to this point. When that happens, is there a feeling that there's a need to maybe reset the chemistry of the team? And, you know, this move and maybe others that follow will be about, okay, we kind of dialed this the wrong direction. We need to go a different route, and not just, you know, obvious baseball stats and skills, but just like the chemistry part of it.
Yeah, I think, you know, without Andrew on the team, it does create opportunity for somebody else to play that's a younger player. So that's going to happen a little bit with this trade. You know, the chemistry part of it, you know, there's not a concern on our end. You know, I know that, you know, going into the Toronto trip, coming out of the Toronto trip, there was some questions, you know, what would our clubhouse be like? But just being in that clubhouse and being around it, it didn't feel different to me, or there was no concern on our end, and also having a lot of discussions with players. So, you know, at the end of the day, when teams are playing well, the chemistry is good. I don't think the chemistry necessarily dictates wins. It helps, but I don't think just because you have good chemistry, you're going to win 95 games. You got to have talent on the field along with the chemistry. And that's when I think it all comes together. So that's where we're at with that one.
And then last question, you had where you thought you'd be, you're not there, right? But now what's your vision of how far the team is along, and have you had to reset it and maybe rethink the plan moving forward?
No, I think we're all very encouraged by the last month. I mean, it's, you know, we're not 10 games over 500, but we're basically right at 500. We've seen offensively things we can do at times. We had tough the last two days, but, you know, the offense has clearly improved over the last month and a half or so, and we've gotten some good pitching performances, you know, and I think our struggles in the bullpen really are correlated to our struggles with starting pitching. There's a lot of pressure on that bullpen. So we get a couple good starts, bullpen's fresh, the bullpen's good. When we start doing that on a more consistent basis, I think we're playing more to the level that we expected going into the year. We can't eliminate what happened the first 6 weeks. That doesn't go away. That's history. But we can move forward and be positive and look at some of the wins we're getting, basically meaning players playing better and doing things that we believe they're capable of. And that's what I think we have to look forward to in the second half of the year. And when we evaluate this team going into 23, a lot of questions on certain players need to be answered along the way. And that's what the last, you know, whatever it is now, 70 games left will represent.
All right, there it is, J.J. Piccolo breaking down the trade and talking about what these – I think these 73 games are important. I think the pitching needs to keep progressing. And I think, you know, he's right. They've had some good pitching performances, and they need to have more of them. But they're a little bit of a window into the thought process of what the Royals are doing. Again, I like the trade. We'll talk about it with Jeff Passan coming up in our next segment when he gets off SportsCenter. We will get to Jeff. I don't know why it's a crude interruption that we have with SportsCenter. One of the other big subjects, of course, Andrew Benintendi, one of the 10 players that could not go to Toronto because he wasn't vaccinated. The Yankees play the Blue Jays and potentially have playoff series looming against the Blue Jays. There was a report out there from John Heyman that said, you know, that Benintendi had told people that he would get vaccinated, that the Yankees had clearly checked into this. And that has now been debunked. Andrew Benintendi said today, what was it, Curtis? He basically said, no one from the Yankees has talked to me about vaccinations, right?
Right, right. He was asked directly if anybody had because of the report that was out there, and he said no, all they talked to him about was baseball.
Sam McDowell of the Star asked J.J. Piccolo how it feels to hear a second player say that the standings changed their mind about the vaccine.
Yeah, I mean, our stance hasn't changed on that. We let our players make decisions, and they chose not to get vaccinated. You know, what I can tell you is that nothing came up in the discussions that we had with the Yankees about whether or not Andrew would get vaccinated. So that's really a Yankee issue right now, and we'll see how it plays out.
So that question was asked before the Andrew Benintendi quote had come out that the Yankees hadn't talked to him. It was asked based upon the reports that had, you know, Benintendi making that clear to people. Now that does not seem to be the case. Now, I will say this. Could the Yankees have reached out to his agent and his agent said, listen, he's going to do it. If you trade for him, he'll do it. And Andrew Benintendi is now waffling on that or is willing to do it but doesn't want to say it right now? I don't know. I mean, we're talking about a lot of, you know, off the record type conversations that could happen. But to be clear, the Royals got a player traded to a team that might have to go play in Toronto and play playoff games. And again, the haul they got, I think, is pretty good. So I think this was a win for the Royals in getting Andrew Benintendi traded and getting what they got back in return. Chiefs get Carlos Dunlap brought into the fold. Steve Spagnuolo today tried not to because the deal had not been made official. It didn't become official until, I don't know, but in the last hour or so, but tried not to talk specifically about Carlos Dunlap.
Let me do this real quick. I know there's talk out there about us signing a player. I don't know that there's pen to paper right now, so I won't go there. I did have a chance to speak with him last night. It was a good visit, and then I'll let Coach Reed take it from there, okay, guys? And I'm sure we'll have opportunities to talk about that player going forward. So with that, I'll just open it up.
Coach, you mentioned being fired up, and you had an opportunity to talk to him. Granted, we don't know if it's confirmed or not, yeah. But if you did sign him,
you're going to do that to me, aren't you? You're going to do that. That's really good. That's really good. Yeah. Listen, I would say this particular player. How's that? I'm always happy to add big, long guys, right, that have experience or played in the league. But I'll be honest with you. I mean, I do know something about the player just from afar, right? But until we get him in here to find out where we can use him best, and that's exactly what I told him last night when we talked. So I'm not sure if it answered the question or not, but that's what I'm going with.
6'6", 285 pounds. Dunlap is that long, kind of tall defensive end that he tends to covet.
NASCAR package kind of guy.
Yeah, he fits that mold, and so it's now been made official. So Carlos Dunlap will be with the Kansas City Chiefs. 8.5 sacks last year as a situational pass rusher. I think you can expect him to be used in a similar fashion by the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think they're definitely a better football team today than they were yesterday for getting him into the mix. Chris Jones will line up alongside him. He talked about Dunlap today and what he'll bring to the defense.
His resume speaks for itself. I think he had 7 or 8 sacks last year for Seattle. You know, he's a high character guy. I trained with him this offseason in Miami. And if we're able to add him and if the report is true, we'll accept Carlos with open arms. I think he's a veteran guy that's had a lot of experience in this league. And to have a veteran guy like that in this position group, I think it would be remarkable.
What do you feel like maybe he brings, Chris, that maybe you guys didn't have?
I think experience, one of the things. You know, we got a young group this year, fairly young to me. I'm like one of the older guys in the group. I think he bring a lot of experience. He bring a lot of wisdom to the group. He also can influence the group, you know what I mean, with his leadership ability. So we'd love to have him.
They'd love to have 8.5 sacks from him, right? Yeah. Which is what he had last year in 2020, 6 sacks, 9 and 19, 8 and 18, 7.5. He's got 96 sacks in his career. 96 sacks.
Wow.
By the way, he was a guy that I had. I have to go back to his draft class, 2010. But I had him coming to the Chiefs. You know how we always talk about do your draft and save it? Mm-hmm. I got to go back and find that because I had Dunlap to the Chiefs as one of my draft picks. I've always kept an eye on him because of that, because he was one of the guys that I had him taking. I've got the draft right here. I'll click off of it over it. Let's see. Who did the Chiefs take? Because I had the Chiefs taking Dunlap instead of whoever they took.
Was that?
And 10, the 10 draft.
That would have been.
10? Yeah. 2010.
Eric Berry?
I say for a 10th time.
Eric Berry.
I didn't have him going 5. Because didn't he go in the second round?
Let me see.
That would have been,
Dexter McCluster.
McCluster was the second rounder.
The shoebreaker.
Yeah, I had Dunlap going 36 to the Chiefs. He ultimately would go 54 to the Bengals, but I had him 36 to the Chiefs.
I think the best thing going about Dunlap for me is he's got those 96 sacks, but at no point is there some insane high watermark that messes with that, where it's not like he had 21 year and then it's just kind of with a few twos and threes the rest of the time. It's all very consistent.
And I'll point out Melvin Ingram, who many people were, kind of heartbroken when he didn't re-sign. Melvin Ingram has had 16 sacks since 2018. Since 2018, Dunlap has had 31.5.
That would be more.
That would be more than
almost exactly twice as many. And this someone, another good veteran voice, I guess, to be in the ear of George Karloftis. People were kind of having fun of the fact that on Monday there was a shot after practice of him working one-on-one with Frank Clark. Like, Clark was showing him moves. People were like, showing him what? Move was he showing him? Yeah. Carlos Dunlap could maybe actually show George Karloftis a move or two, maybe.
Here's the push real hard against the tackle that's squared up right in front of you. Yeah, Dunlap will have a few more to show Karloftis. One more from Chiefs camp today, Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Certainly one of the things we've talked about, in addition to, you know, having some trouble staying healthy each of his first couple of years. But I think a lot of us expected a lot more out of Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the passing game. That was brought up today. He said he'll be a factor in the passing game.
Man, I'm 1,010% confident in my hands. I feel like I'm one of the best pass catchers as far as, you know, running back in the league, and I'll completely stand on that. And that's just one of those things. I feel like Coach EB and Coach Reed they're trying to get implemented. And it's one of Pat's things too. Like, I don't just have to throw it to the receiver. I can throw it to, you know, anybody on the field. I mean, we throw it to O linemen too. So it's just, that's what we do. Like, that's we throw the ball to everybody.
Held you back the last few years from being able to show that more?
It's concepts and personnel. I mean, if 10's 80 yard downfield and I'm running a flat, who you gonna throw it to? You know what I'm saying? It's like I'm gonna throw the touchdown. Like, it's those things that wins games, but, you know, that flat might have pulled that wheel back out just so he can get up the field. So it's those things, you know, everything benefits, but it's like once you start adding in certain wrinkles and can implement, you know, me in the pass game as far as being outside and not just running, you know, flats and just from a stationary spot, it gets a lot more fun for me and everybody else.
He's confident. Now he's got to do it.
Yeah, and, you know, I really, really hope he's good because he is so fun to listen to. That was a nice – it was a good answer.
Yeah.
One we didn't play was – he mentioned, do you want the ball more? Do you get frustrated if you don't get the ball more? He's like, you know what? I'm not going to say I don't want the ball thrown to me, because, but I'm not a selfish player. He says, if we go 80 yards down the field, I don't see the ball, that's fine. We scored. He said, it says KC on the side of my helmet. I don't have a bunch of Clyde Edwards-Helaire stuff I'm worried about. I want to win games. I want to score points. And if that means someone else does it, that's fine. I love that.
Yeah, I agree. And I also love that the Chiefs have not just forced the ball into his hands to try to create stats to justify the draft pick.
Yeah.
I mean, they probably should have gone to a third straight Super Bowl. They're fine. Like, it you know. If the draft pick doesn't live up, if he doesn't return the investment on the draft pick, that's not a problem as long as they win games. So I'm with you. I like hearing what I hear from Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I'm rooting for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. And I'll tell you what, in your fantasy league, I'd go ahead and take a shot at him. Like, should he go in the first round? No, he shouldn't. We've seen enough of that, and they've got enough depth at the running back position. But is there still an untapped ability there? I think there is, and to his point, you know, maybe he gets used a little bit more in the passing game this year. We'll find out. We take a break here. We're live at Hen House. Great spot to get started for the weekend. If you're going to come in and do some shopping, you are all set. Take advantage of great specials back at the Butcher Block. Great specials on the USDA Choice Certified Hereford Beef Steaks. We got T-bone steaks, $9.99 a pound, porterhouse, $10.99 a pound, and filet mignon. The steak that Blair Kirkhoff goes for, the boneless filet mignon, $18.99 a pound. And, of course, if you want to have some burgers, perfect for burgers is the 80% lean ground chuck. It's ground fresh several times each day. You can get it right now for just $3.79 a pound. Check it out. You can find all these specials and more at henhouse.com, supporting local farmers right here in our area. That is what Hen House does. Check it out. Go to henhouse.com right now. When we come back, we talk to Jeff Passan, our Major League Baseball insider, joins us next.
Husband, father, Elmo impersonator? Yeah! He wrote The Arm and is currently writing its follow-up, The Leg. He has everyone's phone number, even yours. He's MLB insider Jeff Passan of ESPN, only on the program.
Our buddy Jeff Passan, senior Major League Baseball insider for ESPN, joins us here in the program as we speak, as he is fresh off his SportsCenter hit. He's brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System. If you've got an orthopedic or sports injury, the experts that care for the Royals, care for the Chiefs, they can see you quickly right there at 435 and Nall. Walk-in clinic. I mentioned already had friends that are telling me, yeah, by the way, that's the easiest thing ever. About a half hour, got the diagnosis we needed, whether it's a break, a sprain, a strain. Ages 5 and up, open 8A to 7P. Take advantage of it. Walk right in. 435 and Nall. Basically diagonal to the Topgolf. That's where you'll find the experts that treat the Royals and Chiefs, and get treated there yourself. 435 and all, it's the University of Kansas Health System. Jeff, how are you, my friend?
I am lovely, Saran. How are you?
I'm great. The more I dug into the trade that the Royals make, the more I liked it. Do you like what they were able to get done?
I'm going to be that guy who doesn't answer the question you're asking and instead answers with a caveat.
Okay.
I will like the trade if the Royals allow the pitchers for whom they traded to throw their best pitches. If you go and look at Beckway is the best pitcher that they got. A really electric arm, but his hallmark is a nasty slider. And I don't know if you saw the video that I posted that Kylie McDaniel had taken, but Beckway throws a slider that sweeps. He throws a slider that drops. It's a nasty pitch, a really nasty pitch. But the slider is also a pitch that, the Royals have been reticent to allow some of their minor leaguers to throw. And Beckway throws sliders around 55% of the time in his minor league career. And that's just not something, the Royals are an organization that had been very fastball command first, and then essentially you get to unleash your toys. Beckway's slider essentially functions as his fastball. Like, that's his primary pitch. So I'll be curious to see if his pitch usage changes at all. If they allow him to do what has been effective to this point, then I think he has a chance to be a mid-rotation type starter. But you got to let your guys succeed where they're going to succeed, as opposed to follow some sort of prescribed plan. Because the organization looks at the success or lack thereof from some of the starting pitching prospects they've drafted and developed, and the plan, at least for them, has not been working late.
And I get your avoidance of the question, and I agree. I kind of think of it as like two different questions. There's one, what you got, and then there's two, what you do with it. That's the what you're doing with it part. Did they get enough for Andrew?
They got talent. Like they got talented arms. They got three talented arms, all of whom should be, when it's all said and done, big league pitchers. I believe they will get three big league pitchers now. It's a matter of strategy, too. Would you rather, and this is a question I'm posing to you, would you rather get three guys who are going to be big leaguers, but probably none among them are going to be stars, or at least the star potential among them isn't that high? Or would you rather go for one guy and shoot the moon and trust your scouts and player development people to turn him into a potential star? I think that's more what the Royals did, for example, in the trade for Drew Waters. Drew Waters is a toolsy guy, and if everything clicks right, suddenly you're looking at an all-star caliber player. Here, I think they went more for the volume play, which reflected where they feel like they are in the organization's evolution, where they need more arms, more bodies at this point. So it's a strategic thing, and the reality is, Saran, I'd like to think I know a lot about the Royals organization, but I certainly do not know in great depth the lower levels of their farm system enough to understand how important getting pitching depth is for them. But it was clearly important enough in this situation, where they took arguably their most valuable asset at the deadline and went out and turned it into that starting pitching depth.
Yeah, and I hear what you're saying. In baseball trades, even if it is just for one guy, they love to throw in a couple of, like, throw-ins just to kind of muddy the water and not have it be just, well, it's Drew Waters or bust.
Yeah, lottery.
Yeah.
Sure. sure.
Yeah. And sometimes they're even like, well, we know this guy's not going to do anything. We need to get a little something else. I mean, maybe they have a hope for every guy they ever get. But I get it. And this, I think, is more depth than it is the one upside guy, like for Drew Waters. But I think, you know, that's where you would know better than me because you talk to so many of the agents and GMs. But, like, the idea that, you know, you don't – like, I'm sitting here at Hen House right now. You know, I want apples. I sift through the apples, and I grab the ones that I like the best. And nobody says, no, you can't have that apple, right? Trades aren't like that. This is the best apple ever. Yeah, you can't have it. It's my apple. I'm not giving it to you. And so it is harder, and I was kind of trying to get at that from JJ. I thought it was interesting what he said about – I said, well, do you go and just beat down the door and say, I want these guys? Or is it like, hey, here's who's on the lot. These are the ones that are available. And I know every situation's different, and, you know, getting a team at the right time is a big part of the equation. But it's, you know, I don't know that you just have one strategy that every time we trade, we want the highest upside guy we can get. Sometimes you need depth. For bats, that might be better. But for pitching, getting the depth might be better just because of the volatility of pitching, right?
I think I agree with pretty much everything you said there. And if that's the, you know, if that's the Royals strategy, what they need to do is to make sure that their pitchers actually develop. Because it's all well and good to have volume, but if you got volume without production, what the hell good is volume, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's great to have any number of guys who could be something, but until guys are, then the could be doesn't have quite as much value because you're just not sure if they're going to pan out or what the likelihood of them panning out is considering recent history. And recent history stretches back a fair amount of time.
Well, yeah, that's the elephant in the room is that they haven't developed pitching. And so, you know, one of the first calls I took was Ted, who's a big Royals fan, and he's like, listen, I'd rather have seen him get all bats and then bring the bats all the way up to the big leagues and or be on the cusp of the big leagues and then trade prospects for proven pitching because they can't develop it. And I, you know, can't is strong, but the gist of what he's saying, you can understand the pessimism of the fans. Like, it, you know, if they're like, oh, great, they moved Benintendi. Oh, they got three pitchers that are going to come up and not throw strikes. Right? Like, that's – I get
well,
that frustration.
I think T.J. Sikkema is going to throw strikes. That I feel pretty good about. I mean, I believe his strikeout to walk ratio this year is 54-9. So he's and that's in 36 innings. So I think he's a strike thrower. And
well, if he doesn't, we certainly know where the problem lies, don't we?
I mean, it's not linear like that, but it's hard to make a linear case in baseball. So yeah, you look at something like that, and who else are you going to blame?
Yeah, a guy who's always thrown strikes for the other organization in his baseball career comes to a new organization and now doesn't throw strikes, I blame the new organization. That's pretty easy to figure out. So, I do like that they're getting guys that throw strikes. I also like guys that – these are guys that get swing and misses. All of them are more than 9 per 9. Sikkema is at like 13 per 9. Now, I think I think the Yankees were holding him down to kind of, you know, one, because he's just getting back from being hurt, but also to kind of bloat the stats a little bit, I think, as part of what they were doing and improve his trade value. But they all have swing and miss, you know, ability at the levels they've been at. That's a good place to start because a lot of guys, I'm tired of watching, you know, an organization that's building itself around big league pitchers that are walking three and striking out two in five innings. Like, that's not how the game is played today. They'll let you strike them out. They'll take a big cut with two strikes now. And if your guys can't get it, they're not good. Period. End of discussion. These guys are getting those strikeouts.
It's interesting, though, to look at minor league stats. I believe I saw something yesterday organizationally. The Yankees strikeout rate among their pitchers down in their farm system is 27%+. And I think the Royals were something like 22. And there were a few teams that were below where the Royals are, but they certainly were not among the elite, which frankly is where you want to be, man. That's like when you're creating starting pitchers, when it is your organizational duty to get starting pitchers ready for the major league, to get relief pitchers ready for the major leagues, you have to prioritize strikeouts because it's 2022, and that is what the game is.
I can't believe the Royals are within 5% of the Yankees.
Well, I mean, the Yankees at 27 plus are like an outlier. The average in the minor leagues, so I have this here, the average in the minor leagues strikeout rate is 24.7%. The Royals are at 22.5%.
Yeah, I can't believe they're not at like 12. Like, they can't strike anybody out. I'm shocked it's that close.
All right. I mean, the thing, you know, I was talking about fastball. The Royals have the third highest fastball rate among minor league pitchers. Number one is Washington. Number two is Detroit. Number four is Pittsburgh. Number five is Arizona. Royals pitchers in the minor leagues are throwing fastballs 58.6% of the time. They have a collective ERA this year of 5.08. So the effectiveness has not been there.
Well, and I think you just rattled off. I think those are all teams that are stuck in old ways that don't work. I mean, all those teams you mentioned have bad records at the big league level.
No doubt, no doubt. I don't think Pittsburgh is necessarily stuck in old ways. But I think you can definitely lump Washington and Detroit into that category. And now, mind you, I'll keep going down the list. Arizona, pretty analytically inclined team, is fifth. Boston, a very analytically inclined team, is sixth. Los Angeles Dodgers, maybe the most analytically inclined team aside from Tampa Bay, seventh. Colorado, eighth. Oakland, ninth. Philadelphia, tenth. So you've got a mixture in there, but definitely at the top end are teams that are looked at certainly as being of the older school mentality.
Do you think the Royals get anything else done?
I think they could get a lot done. Whit Merrifield, out there. Scott Barlow, out there. Brad Keller could be had. Like, Brad Keller could move, potentially. If the market for controllable starting pitching remains as clogged as it is, I could absolutely see a team going to the Royals and trying to backdoor Brad Keller. I don't think there are any sacred cows among the veterans on this team right now, nor should there be. I mean, you look at their record at this point, and should everybody but Whit, Melendez, Salvi, Pasquantino, and Prado be available? Yeah, probably.
They absolutely should all be available. I'm of the opinion, and JJ said something today where he's like, I said, well, when you're coming up, he mentioned, look, we're not where we thought we would be, where we expected to be this year. I said, well, when that's the case, like, do you got to kind of reset the chemistry of the clubhouse? And he said, and I think he took it like, we played it a little bit ago about how I asked it, but, he kind of took it from the like, oh, no, we all thought we were going to have chemistry problems after the Toronto situation, but I've been in the clubhouse and it's good, it's back to normal. And I'm like, well, back to normal was 20 under 500, right? Like, yeah. I think there – does anybody – have you ever talked to a GM that subscribes to the theory that, like, okay, if we brought these pieces together and we thought they were going to be 500 or a little bit better and they're not, then somebody's moving. We're trading somebody to make it clear that this will not be tolerated. Like, are they at that point with this club?
I think the market will determine that. Don't you think it's cutting off your nose to spite your face to trade somebody for any reason other than you feel like the long-term prospects of your team are going to be objectively better? And I feel we just differ there. Then I feel
let me finish and let me say no. There's addition by subtraction, and if you've got someone that is, like if you've got a group that's comfortable being 20 under 500, like because here's what's happening: they're playing 500 baseball right now. And what's going to happen at the end of the year is they're going to go, my fear is, you throw out those first, 54 games, and we're a 500 club. I mean, we're right there. No, all 162 count. And, like,
you can throw out the last 54 games and you're 20 under 500. I mean, that's the response to that. I don't disagree that addition by subtraction is a real phenomenon. I just don't know that it applies in this situation. I think that applies when there are cancers in the clubhouse. I don't know if there's a clubhouse cancer at this point.
Is there clubhouse complacency, though? Or did the Royals just completely misread what they've got?
Saran, is that on the players or the manager?
Listen, something's got to change. I mean, you could change the manager. If that's where it needs to go. I also think that they're allowed to – listen, it was Sam asked it, otherwise it was going to be me, about the vaccination with Andrew Benintendi in today's deal. None of the beat guys hit the question. And, you know, I watched the Mike Matheny postgame press conferences, and I get it. I'm not trying to call out the people who are on the beat, but there are times he makes some moves, and you're like, you know, I don't think he should have done that. And why is he using that reliever here? He had the same situation last night, and he did it totally different. And we don't get into those discussions because they're not playing meaningful games. It's kind of like, who cares? Like, they're not going anywhere anyway. All the discussions are these big picture theoretical, how do you fix the pitching overall and who to draft and who to trade for stuff. So Mike Matheny kind of flies under the radar. But I think that's partially because it's super comfy town to play sports in. I mean, like whoever gets their ass kicked in Kansas City, like if you were playing this kind of ball in Philadelphia or New York, like Mike Matheny would be skewered every night, right? Like this town's kind of like, eh, you know, the first quarter of the season doomed us. We got the Chiefs starting in a couple of months. We're good. Whatever. Like it, which is great. I mean, it's nice people, but it's pretty comfy.
I don't think fans look at the Royals like this is okay. I mean, you're almost suggesting there's complacency among the fans now too, right?
I think there's apathy. I don't know that I'd call it complacency. It's like, the Chiefs are coming. You know, we're good. We're okay. You know.
I mean, I don't root for the Royals. It's part of my job, I can't. But I also, like, generally speaking, am not rooting for sports teams. But what I am is a sounding board for fans and for friends who do follow the Royals and who are frustrated and rightfully frustrated because this team is – it's not that this team is bad, which it is. It's that this is not what they were told was going to happen, right? Like this was supposed to be a transitional year to the cusp of contention. This was going to be the year where if things broke right for the Royals, they were going to win 85 games. And if things broke wrong, they were going to win 77 games. And if things broke as planned – they were going to be an 81-81 team and go and sign guys this offseason and transition into that winning period. The frustration is that they feel like they were sold something that's not there. And I can understand how that would breed apathy. And that's something that the Royals organization needs to fight against. But we also have to recognize, like, you know, taking dudes out to the guillotine, is that the answer? I don't know. It might be. Like, you might be right. Maybe heads do need to roll in order to change things, but I just that's not the kind of sports viewer I am. I have aged, Seren, I have softened, and I am far. And the reason you're a good radio host is because you love firing people.
That's not true. That's so unfounded. I've called for change on the pitching side for the Royals, but I have not called for anyone's job. I have said, though, if change doesn't come, then I will call for someone's job. It's not working what they're doing. I don't call for people's jobs. In fact, maybe to a fault, I don't call for people's jobs. But, yes, I'm more opinionated than you at times. The job calls for it. I get that point. And I'm not asking anyone to be brought out to the guillotine or publicly shamed. I'm just saying – if you've got a group of – if everybody's, you know – and listen, I'm not on the flights, and even being in the clubhouse the 5 minutes that you're in there and it's, you know, the guys – everybody hides in the back now anyway and everything. But, you know, to feel like I've got the pulse of this clubhouse. You have the pulse if you're on the plane and, you know, in the hotels and really around them. You know, I don't know.
On the road, for sure.
Yes. And so the beat folks are certainly more in tune with that than I am. But I think, you know, if you had expectations and they were reasonable and they're not met, something has to change. And I don't think it's just like, oh, pisser, like the baseball gods didn't smile on us. You have to go change something. Otherwise, why would you expect anything else to change? Something was clearly fundamentally wrong if you didn't reach your goal. Now,
let's tease this one out. How much change does a club need? Is it something like, you know, Whit Merrifield, who's been around forever during these lean years? He's the one to go. Is that enough? Or does it need to be Merrifield and Barlow? Or does it need to be Barlow and Keller? Or does it, like, what's the change that you think would satisfy a fan base that is desirous for it?
They may have missed their opportunity, but Whit Merrifield's comments probably should have had him traded within 24 hours. Like, I think that's what I would have done. Like, you're going to say that, you know, oh, if you get to another team and contend, like, even, you know, I think it was partially just an honest mistake, although he kept trying to fix it, and he still wasn't realizing what it was he said that was bad for the organization to hear. But I think a statement needed to be made. Like, if you're like, oh, you'll try, like, you'll do everything within your powers to play when you get to a team that's winning but not this organization, I think you should have said that will not be tolerated. And I think they should have made a move on him, and I still think they should make a move on him. If they don't, okay, I hope it works out. I also don't think Whit Merrifield will bring anything. So I don't know, which, when they won't bring anything, that means they're not worth anything. So why do you keep building your ball club around the guy?
I mean, the Merrifield conversation is more that's an interesting one to have, I think, because that, to me, is a stark line that exists between the Kansas City Royals and an organization like the Rays. And let me just say, the Rays are an outlier organization in their willingness to look at players mostly through the lens of value. Now, don't get me wrong. They treat players very well when they're there. They treat their families there. But what they acknowledge is that players are fungible. And they can acknowledge this because they're so good at drafting, signing, and developing guys that they can generally replace from within. And if they don't have something from within, when they're making those trades, they go and get it outside. So if the Rays had Whit Merrifield, he would have been gone 2 years ago. Like, that's just the reality of it. But the Royals said, it's an important thing to us that there's some continuity and some familiarity. And maybe it's, you know, maybe it's easier to operate the way that the Rays do when the fan base there just is not the same as it is in Kansas City, or really, frankly, anywhere else. You know, it allows you to be more creative like that. It allows you to treat players the way that they do, which is as assets. You know, I think there's an argument that the Royals could stand to think more like the Rays, because you look at the success that the Rays have had. They don't have a ring like the Royals do. That is true. Like, they have not won a world championship in their history, but in terms of recent sustained success, it's not even close.
Yeah. Time for our Final Four, brought to you by the University of Kansas Health System, the official health care provider of the Royals. If you have an urgent orthopedic or sports injury, the University of Kansas Health System can see you quickly. Learn more at kansashealthsystem.com/sportsmedicine. I will start you with this. Who has the best record in baseball at the end of the year?
Los Angeles Dodgers.
Okay. When will the Kansas City Royals make the playoffs next?
2025.
Okay. Where does Juan Soto play next year?
Oh, Lord. In Southern California.
SoCal. All right, I'll take that. It does sound like something the Angels go get another bat. You know, load up on another big bat contract. That sounds like something.
Now, there are two other teams in the Southern California area who I think are much likelier.
I know, but that's why I threw in the Angels, the Padres, and Dodgers. Everyone think is are who it's coming down to. We'll see. All right, finally, career home runs for Mike Trout. He's at 334. Where does he finish with now that we're finding out he's got a chronic back injury?
I don't think, by the way, it's nearly – I think it was severely overblown. Listen, I may eat my words on that one because it's a back injury and those are never good. So I will let my number do the talking. 644.
Okay, that's still quite a few. That's another 310 to go, so that says what you think. Jeff, you're the man. Great stuff today. We appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk next week.
Thanks, Ren. See you, pal.
Jeff Passan, ESPN, best in the business, the senior Major League Baseball insider for ESPN. We're at Hen House. It is the spot. Talk about the senior spot to come in and get everything you need. They've been serving Kansas City for 99 years, for crying out loud. The certified Hereford beef, you get it only here at Hen House. See all the great specials at Hen House by going to the website, henhouse.com. Hot. No, no.
We're almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
But first, the good sense into the hour answer. Since 1995, how many series have the Royals won at Yankee Stadium? Two. They took out of three in 2011 and 2014. Since then, they've been swept 11 times.
Wow, that is not what you want to hear. That is not what you want to hear. Good Sense. You want to hear that, though, goodsensesubs.com. Get you a great sandwich right now. You can order for whatever time you want to pick it up. You know, you can do that. You can pick what time. They'll also deliver it as well. Good Sense, founded in Lenexa, Kansas, locally owned and operated. That's your neighborhood Good Sense. 30% more meat. That meat and cheese, it's sliced right in front of you. And, of course, the bread baked fresh twice each day. Go get you some Good Sense on your way home tonight. Always a great plan. A little Good Sense. And, of course, don't sleep on all their other meals as well. They got their grab-and-go meals. They are fantastic. My kids love the pasta. It's your neighborhood Good Sense. GoodSenseSubs.com. Find the location nearest you. I want to thank everybody here at Hen House today. Of course, you can get stocked up back at the Butcher Block. Great specials on the certified Hereford beef. Go to henhouse.com to find that. Let's hear Kyler Murray. His contract details coming out today. He held an unplanned press conference to address the story. He said the suggestion by the media that the clause was added because he doesn't have a good work ethic.
Today, I'm talking today because, I feel it's necessary, with what's going on as far as regarding me and the things that are being said about me. It's almost, to think that I can accomplish everything that I've accomplished in my career and not be a student of the game and not have that passion and not take this serious is almost, it's disrespectful. And it's almost a joke.
It's not standard language for a contract. Like, how else could you take it?
Right.
I mean, you're the only one that has this.
Yes.
So, like, everybody's saying, well, wait a minute. There's this unique study clause in his contract. That's not them being disrespectful. That's them being honest. Wow, no one else does this. How else could you take it? And that's why I said, I'll go back to what I said when this first came out. I said, if you're Kyler Murray, I don't know how you sign that contract. And if you're the Cardinals and you have to put that clause into your contract, I don't know how you offer that contract.
Very quickly, I'd like to point out, during this press conference, he had a shirt on with the word easy and the S was a dollar sign. Just seems like irrelevant detail.
Okay. I mean, I think it's absolutely a talking point. I think you're embarrassed by it. Yeah, I get it. Because nobody else has this kind of thing in their contracts. We didn't do it. The Cardinals did it. You did it. You signed it. Why'd you sign it?
They didn't pull his name out of a hat of the players. Who's going to get it this year? Oh, it's Kyler Murray. Like it's, a crappy gift, Christmas gift party. It's there for a reason.
Hey, here's your contract. But, if your agent didn't draw your attention to that and you signed it anyway, shame on you. Your agent drew your attention to it. You signed it. Knew how goofy it was and just thought, well, no one will ever see that. Agents pump those contracts out all the time. Again, shame on you. The Cardinals signed a guy that they think they need to put that into his contract. Mm-hmm. Baffling. Baffling how anybody could be upset about that. All right, thanks to all our friends here at Hen House. Always great being at one of my homes away from home. Find your location at henhouse.com.